Welcome to Come and Reason with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Tim Jennings. Together we will reason through complex issues to find evidence-based answers that harmonize scripture, science, and our life experiences. I'm your Come and Reason host, Charles Mills. This program is sponsored by Come and Reason Ministries. Hello, everyone. On today's broadcast, we continue listening as Dr. Jennings reads from his book, Could It Be This Simple? A Biblical Model for Healing the Mind. And I think we can all agree that our human minds could use a whole lot of healing. We're making our way through the chapter in the book that he calls The Casualties of War. And on our previous program, we learned some important points. First, this particular war isn't a local conflict. It's universal, with everyone involved. And it's not about power. It's about love. Second, it's also about discipline and how God, in love, disciplines us as part of the healing process. Now we pick up right where we left off. Here's Dr. Jennings.
Many people conceive of God's glory as great displays of might, power, and fire. But the Bible teaches that His greatest glory reveals itself in His character. Because we are finite beings, many humans frequently react to fear to our all-powerful God. Unfortunately, this fear often leads to rebellion. Once Satan had made his allegations, God could not win his case through the display of power, which would inevitably result in submission based on terror. God will never utilize coercive tactics because they are contrary to his benevolent character. The use of might and power to pressure conformity violates the law of liberty and will result in further rebellion. Such methods belong to Satan. If God employed them, he would ultimately lose his case. Although he has immense power, it is not the source of his glory, because power alone would intimidate, leading us to fear him and subsequently to destroy our love for him. 19th century theologian George MacDonald made this same point. What is the deepest in God, his power? No, for power could not make him what we mean when we say God. A being whose essence was only power would be such a negation of the divine that no righteous worship could be offered him. His service must be fear and fear only. The power isn't what is most important. Instead, it is the trustworthiness of the one who possesses all the power. It is the demonstration of his character, the character of the one who holds the power, that is the real source of divine glory. For example, although God is all-powerful, he can never be provoked, even in the most abusive and horrendous circumstances, to use his power for self-interest. When humanity fully recognizes this, it will restore trust and regenerate love, and we will then open our hearts and minds to him for healing and restoration. The Bible is clear on this issue. The book of Haggai declares that the glory of the second Jewish temple would be greater than that of Solomon's temple, Haggai 2, 7-9. The prophecy refers to the structure the Jews built after returning from Babylonian captivity. But in the book of Ezra, we read that the older Levites and family heads who saw the second temple mourned because it was so small when compared to Solomon's, Ezra 3:12. If the second temple was smaller than the first, how could it be more glorious? Most Bible students immediately explain that because Jesus walked in the courts of the second temple, his presence made it more glorious. But in 2 Chronicles, we read that when Solomon's temple was dedicated, the priests could not enter because the brightness of God's glory was too great, 2 Chronicles 5:13 and 14. In other words, God came to both temples, one in his unveiled splendor, the other in human form. Yet Haggai states that the second temple was more glorious. Why? Because it was at the second temple that Christ revealed the character of God. Because it was at the second temple that Christ showed that he preferred to permit his creatures to abuse him rather than use his power in selfish ways. At the second temple, Christ demonstrated that we can trust the one who has the power. When Moses spoke with God on the mountain, asking the Lord to show him his glory, what did God do? He responded to Moses, "I will cause all my goodness to pass in front of you." Exodus 33:19. Then God passed in front of Moses, proclaiming, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness and rebellion and sin. Exodus 34, 6, and 7. It was at the cross that God presented the greatest demonstration of his character. Through the cross, we see indeed that he is gracious, compassionate, forgiving, patient, kind, faithful, and true. The cross reveals that nothing we do can provoke him to use his immense power in selfish ways. Although he is all-powerful, he is even more gracious. The Creator actually respects the individuality of his intelligent creatures, even if we abuse that individuality in an attempt to destroy him. This revelation refutes the misrepresentations that Satan has so successfully spread through the universe, and particularly on our planet. The depiction of God's character, especially his trustworthiness, wins us back to trust and results in our healing and salvation. What happened at the cross helps explain to some extent why bad things happen to good people. We live on a planet that operates on Satan's principles of survival of the fittest, of self first. And the events of our world illustrate the two great antagonistic motives or methods. God demonstrates that only in an atmosphere of freedom can love exist, that neither can be forced or coerced. The Lord shows that with him, we always have real freedom, even though pain might accompany it. Satan leads us to abuse our freedoms to hurt both others and ourselves, and then he deceives us into believing that it is a result of God's punishment or that God doesn't care or is impotent. But the devil trembles at the prospect that we might actually come to see things as they are. He fears that we might realize that God could not control our actions and still love us at the same time. If he tried, it would destroy love itself. Freedom is essential for love to exist. It follows that love and freedom risk great injury. The reason God hasn't brought an end to our rebellion from his law of love and liberty is that many here on our planet have not yet understood the issues and made an intelligent decision to accept the healing that he offers. God waits patiently, wanting all to be healed. The issue at stake is healing the mind by ennobling the reason, cleansing the conscience, strengthening the will, purifying the thoughts, and regaining control of the feelings. It involves the reestablishment of thoughts and actions based on reason, truth, love, and freedom. God cannot change our hearts and minds by force. Instead, he leaves us free to come to our own conclusions through the revelation of truth spoken in love. Unfortunately, a false gospel prevents this from happening because it represents God in the opposite light. Instead of instilling trust, it implants fear in the human mind. One popular religious teaching states that the problem with sin is not found in our unhealthy hearts and minds, but in God's anger and wrath. It also contends that Christ came to die to appease his wrath. Further, it declares that Christ is in heaven pleading to his Father on our behalf so that when we stand in the judgment, God will see not our sinfulness, but instead Christ's perfect righteousness. This view often masquerades as a wolf in sheep's clothing through such cherished and beloved phrases as covered by the blood, washed in the blood, covered in the robe of Christ's righteousness, and the like. Far from what it professes, this false view is actually the candy-coated rotten apple theory. It holds that no heart change is needed, merely cover the rotten heart with the blood of Christ, and then it appears perfect and can pass through the scrutiny of the judgment. As we have already seen, only those who have cooperated with God for actual heart transformation will enter heaven, because without heart change, we would not be safe to be around. If one of your children came down with smallpox, would you let that child remain in your home with your other children? Or would you want to protect the rest from infection? Should you decide not to let the infected child stay, would that mean you didn't love him or her? Of course not. Would you even be willing to risk your own health by leaving your healthy children at home and going out to provide whatever assistance you could to the sick child? And if you had antibodies in your blood that would cure the child, but the child refused your blood transfusion, what would happen? Would you kill your child? Would your child die? Because we are sick and unfit for heaven, God left his heavenly home to bring us the cure, the truth about himself. If we reject the cure, the result of that choice will be death. We see the reality revealed in the Old Testament story that occurred after Israel's exodus from Egypt. Shortly after leaving captivity, Miriam and Aaron became jealous of Moses and began to argue about who should be leading the people. God intervened by striking Miriam with leprosy. Miriam had to leave the camp and could not return until she had been healed. Numbers chapter 12. Leprosy is a biblical metaphor for sin. We are leprous with minds that operate on principles in opposition to God's methods. Only those who cooperate with God for their healing will be able to enter the heavenly camp. Such healing is the process of regaining one's individuality, the ability to think and act free from the domination of our genetic weakness and according to the principles of love, truth, openness, and freedom. Some misunderstand this reality. Instead of focusing on the healer and the treatment, they concentrate on their own condition. Finding fault with themselves, they doubt their salvation. Many of my patients are consumed with insecurity about their salvation because they continue to recognize defects in themselves. They fail to see that the issue isn't one of past mistakes or even ongoing struggles, but of participating in the healing process. Suppose that you have become sick with pneumonia in both your lungs, and your symptoms include fevers, shortness of breath, and ever-diminishing strength. If you do nothing, wouldn't you be on the path toward death? But if you go to the physician and begin treatment that includes antibiotics, wouldn't you have entered the path of life? Do you expect to be well immediately on the day that you leave the path of death and commence the path of life? Start your antibiotics. Of course not. But does the healing begin on the day that you begin antibiotics? And as long as you stay on the path of life, take your antibiotics and keep your doctor's appointments, you can safely assume that a healthy outcome is guaranteed. In the process of recovery from pneumonia, you'll likely encounter more fevers, chills, sweats, and coughing up ugly stuff. Are such symptoms evidence that your condition is getting worse? Or could you actually cough up more phlegm after you start the antibiotics as the medicines begin attacking the infection? When we enter the path of life and begin working with God for the healing of our mind, along the way we often cough up some noxious things. Defects of character often come out, and mistakes get made. But those mistakes don't indicate loss of salvation. Instead, they often represent the struggle against and the expulsion of such defects from the character. Once you begin the antibiotics to treat your pneumonia, if you decide to halt your medicine and no longer visit the doctor, what will happen? After we come to Christ, if we choose to stop walking with Him and stop cooperating with Him for the healing of our mind, what will likely occur? Physicians do not kill their non-compliant patients, but too often those patients die. God's rebellious and unruly children also perish. Just as the wages of non-compliance with medical treatment is death, so the wages of sin is also death. Both occur as the inevitable consequence of choosing a self-destructive course. Death comes to the wicked as a consequence of their own violation of the universal principles that govern life, because of persistently ignoring the laws of love and liberty. Remember that both laws are not legislative enactments, but are similar to the law of gravity, a constant reality in the universe. Because of humanity's ignorance about these issues, God has graciously intervened to suspend the reaping of the consequence of breaking the laws of love and liberty, and has instead provided human beings with an opportunity for deliverance.
Well, we have a lot more to learn about the God who loves us, and we'll pick up right where we left off on our next broadcast. Dr. Jennings is reading from his book, Could It Be This Simple? A Biblical Model for Healing the Mind. Be sure to join us. Until then, check out the many resources Dr. Jennings and his team have made available at commonreason.com. This program was sponsored by Come and Reason Ministries. Until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Dr. Tim Jennings, wishing you God's presence in your life. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for spending time with us today. To continue the journey, I urge you to visit comeandreason.com. Here you'll find many excellent resources to help you gain a deeper understanding of the God we all love and serve. That's at comeandreason.com. This is Charles Mills, along with Dr. Tim Jennings, inviting you to join us the next time we come and reason together.